URN. The Pulse.
We are now getting on to the big story of the day. Liz Truss, after 44 days, has resigned. Lottie, I'm going to come to you for the story.
So I'm actually reading this from an Impact article because we actually did publish...
Incredible, big up Impact.
We published one earlier, it's a little shameless plug. But yeah, so as it's been mentioned, she resigned after only 44 days in office. We've been promised a new Prime Minister by the 28th of October, which is obviously next week. Truss has said in her statement that she could not deliver the mandate on which she was elected and has notified the King of her resignation. Within the next week, we can expect a Conservative leadership election and Truss remains in office until her successor has been chosen. So kind of like starting off the discussion, what are kind of the thoughts on the length of the speech? It seemed very rushed and kind of like... She even did this like little grin at the end, like she was really pleased with how it went. Like, so yeah, kind of what are your thoughts on how she addressed the matter?
It wasn't a long speech, it was only like 3 minutes, which I think it could have been longer. Also, she did too many U-turns throughout her time in Parliament, like Prime Minister. So I think it was kind of good for her to leave because she wasn't doing much. But those are my thoughts.
I mean, we've 44 days is embarrassingly short, isn't it?
Yeah.
And the fact that, I mean, it's honest, which is more than we can say for a lot of the things we've had recently, saying, yeah, I can't do it. I can't deliver on the mandate, which is, it's embarrassing, but honest at least.
Sam Allardyce lasted longer as England manager.
Yeah, that, and he played one game.
He had one game and then he got sacked.
Yeah, because, 100% win record though.
Yeah. He can die with that, can't he?
Yeah, 100% win record. Not sure Truss really counts as 100% win. Well, I suppose in leadership elections, but yeah. Cora, you want to say something?
Yeah, I was just going to say, it kind of reminds me of when you're doing like a group work project and you have that one person who's just signed their name at the top, and when they're trying to explain why their work isn't there, it's usually, my dog ate my homework. And that's kind of just the vibe I'm getting from Liz after these 44 days. Hasn't had much. 12 of those days as well was in mourning of the Queen.
So she can do anything.
Yeah, so it's 32 days probably of work that could have been done, and not much has come from it other than just chaos.
Yeah, no, it has been an awful run. I'm not even sure you can call it a run, really. She barely got started. But... It begs the question, how bad must Rishi Sunak have been? Because no one ever thought, I mean, we've seen all of the memes, we've seen all of the actual speeches themselves about talking about ridiculous things like pork markets and the amount of cheese we import.
Oh, gosh.
And, you know, and that we will deliver, we will deliver, we will deliver. It's been just, what made her electable to the Tory party? What has made her electable over Rishi Sunak? I mean, I'm not saying I would have preferred him, but I don't know, really, I wouldn't prefer either. But yeah, does anyone want to come in on that?
I think to them it genuinely comes down to the blind loyalty of who was most loyal to Boris Johnson. The actual membership of the Conservative Party is far more right-wing than the MPs are. And you saw that because the fact that Liz Truss had to scrape through... on the parliamentary vote the first time, it was, I think she had to really put in the groundwork to get MPs on her side from Penny Mordaunt, who's one of the contenders to take over. And I think it genuinely came down to this appearance that they had, that Rishi Sunak had abandoned Boris Johnson and Liz Truss was just going to carry on in the same vein. But it's interesting because politically she's far different. Like, Boris Johnson spent a lot of money during his reign, if you want to call it that, you know, had a far bigger stake than she sort of mandated. But I think ultimately when you come in and you say that you're a free market conservative, you know, and you believe in putting, you know, you believe in the markets sort of having their say, and then you put your budget to the markets and, you know, the pound sort of tumbles, then you've got really no mandate to govern anymore. And I think it just kept on getting worse, really. And yeah, she just seemed to have no ability to see what was good for it. It felt like every decision she made, you could have gone, what are you doing? Like, just not even from it, because obviously I'm not a huge Liz Truss fan. But you wanted to go, can she not tell this is like really damaging for her reputation? Every time that, you know, whether it was... Because even in the sense of the... Everyone could tell that the mini budget was a total farce and it wasn't going to work. But then the, you know, the U-turn on it, the everything, she just seemed to... destabilise herself politically again and again, just sort of incessantly. It was quite, to the end of it, it's quite impressive the sort of level of self-destruction she sort of went on. But yeah, I mean, it is really sort of scraping the bottom of the barrel now.
I mean, we've been treated to, sort of since David Cameron left, because whether you're a fan of him or not, at least he could, you know, hold together a decent speech. You know, he didn't try and make awful, awful jokes constantly. He didn't do any ridiculous dancing, and he didn't look like he just stumbled out of a barn after spending the night drinking. So where do we go from here then? Because we've got, like Will said, one contender in, sorry, Penny
Mordaunt. So she came third in the initial parliamentary vote in terms of the Conservative MP. She came third, and then she's already announced she's going to run for it. I'd be very surprised if Rishi Sunak didn't. And then the mood on Twitter from a lot of quite sort of high ranking political journalists seems to be that Boris Johnson wants to make a return as well.
Yeah. So best case scenario then, Lottie, I'm going to come back to you. Best case scenario, what comes out of this? If this race next week?
I think just someone, we need competence, that's the main thing. I think it'll be very hard for any government to kind of get us out of this mess, because it's been a long time coming and a lot of things contribute to it. So I don't think anyone is actually expecting for a leader to come along and fix everything, because that's unrealistic. But I think we just need someone who has an actual solid plan in place. And I mean, I think it's interesting as well, because immediately when I was watching the speech, I was like, okay, Jeremy Hunt's going to be all over this. And he's actually come out and said that he will not even consider running. So I think a lot of the Conservative MPs are very scared of this job. And I mean, rightly so. But we need a bit more certainty, I think, as a nation. Which I don't actually know who would be best to provide that, to be honest. I don't know if any of them are, but that's the main thing we need.
Ome, I'm going to come to you. So is the worst case scenario Boris making another run at it? If he did, do you think people would bring him back after the fact that the country displayed such blatant detest that we ended up with Liz Truss as our Prime Minister for 44 days? Is Boris Johnson coming back the worst case scenario, or could it be even worse?
I think didn't they do a poll between Conservative leaders, or was it Conservative members, where they wanted that Boris Johnson was better than Liz Truss? I think he might make a comeback if he was given the chance to, but I just think they should go for a general election, because I think we've had Conservative for so long, and we've also been through like 4 or 5 Prime Ministers from Conservative, and we've not had a general election yet. So I think that would be the best route, because a lot of people have, like the members of public have been saying they want a general election. But I think, I'm not sure who I would vote for Conservative, or who I would want from Conservative.
So the next general election, I believe, is meant to be next year, if we stuck to the regular, was it 4 or 5 year pattern?
I think so, it'd be 2024.
2024, right, yeah.
It'd basically be like June 2024, I think.
So, okay, so sort of a not quite two years then.
It'll apparently be 2025.
Well, that's okay. The latest it can be. Yeah. It can be anywhere from, depends when they call it.
Which, so obviously, again, an embarrassing fact for the Tories to face up to there, in the fact that we've had so many Prime Ministers in such a short amount of time. How long do we think they can push it, and how long do we think they'll aim to push it without a general election? Or do you think whoever comes in next will say, yes, we'll have, probably albeit another snap election, to consolidate their power, say, look, I am the one the country wants? Or do you think they are aware? I mean, Liz Truss didn't seem aware of a lot, did she? Because she spent about like 5 minutes in silence every time she tried to do a speech, in between sentences as well, not just at the start. So she wouldn't have made it on URN, we'll just say that. So do we think the Tories now are in a defensive position, and it'll be, we don't want a general election, no one even say the word, don't mention it at all, dodge the questions whenever you're asked them? Or do you think it'll be, we need to show that we still are the number one party? God knows how anyone could think that. But again, that's me giving my opinion, because we're allowed to do that on this student radio show. So what do we think, Cora? I'm going to come to you.
Yeah, so I think they're going to still try to keep their grasp on leadership over the country. Yeah. It's quite interesting, actually, because two of their candidates, Penny Mordaunt, I think I'm saying that right, and Ben Wallace, both have defence backgrounds. So if you want to take it literally, I think they are going to go on the defensive by the looks of things. And I think they are aware as well of their influence slowly slipping over the British public.
When you say defence backgrounds, do you mean as in Ministry of Defence?
As in, they were both soldiers, actually.
Oh, wow.
So one was in the Navy, one was in the Army.
Okay. Ben Wallace is very popular with the Conservative membership as well. They really like him. I don't think he ran. He didn't run in the most recent election, but they really do. They really like him.
Okay. They were trying to apparently encourage him to run, but he chose to back Liz Truss instead. So that's what led him to not run. But the fact that he's now in the running this time, knowing he has a lot of backing within the party, we could see him potentially kind of take a front in the race. But again, I do think that they're aware that they don't have the backing of the public anymore. They really need to make a big move that's going to kind of improve their reputation. Otherwise, I think they are going to come under a lot of pressure that will eventually lead to a general election.
So that's a really interesting point that they're both, you know, literal defence backgrounds, both soldiers. So let's have a chat about that then. So soldiers in politics is an interesting one. So if we take a broader view, and let's not apply it to British politics now, let's go to some popular culture. In that soldiers in politics, popular culture might lead us to believe would solve things, because you get a lot of this sort of, if we might have all studied this at GCSE history as well, armchair war supporters, never have their own life in danger, sending everybody else into danger, aware right now that we're not, you know, in a world war or anything. Obviously there's still the conflict going on in Ukraine and everything, but we're not actively sending troops over there. So in terms of real life and being realist, do we think soldiers in politics, good idea, bad idea, scary, or exactly the kind of thing, discipline that we need to take a grip of Tory party and the mess they've made? Will, I'll come back to you.
I think everyone in politics is a good thing. I don't think it's necessarily a sense of you can typecast people in terms of saying the bad or good, but I think people do like ex-service men, ex-service women in politics. It sort of conveys a sense that they understand. I think a lot of the time when a lot of the politicians in this country are sort of have a past in law, or have a past in, you know, in the city, in sort of the financial sector, when politicians have come from sort of an army or a military background, people do feel like it conveys a lot more that they understand. But I think everyone in politics is a good thing. It's difficult with I think having ex-service men and women is good for politics, because it sort of does convey that that sort of lived experience. They've been on the front line, and that's coming from someone who's not really a huge fan of the armed forces. I think it's a good thing.
Okay, I might get collective opinions on that exactly. So if we go around the room, Omay, do you have a similar opinion or anything different to add?
I think it could be a good thing, because they've got quite a good discipline, so I guess that could be good for our country, because we do need discipline. But then it depends, do they know enough about politics? Enough. But I feel like it could be a good thing. I don't have much.
Okay, Cora, without getting too repetitive, it is still the same question.
Yeah, so I do think as well it could be a good thing, for the simple fact that a lot of people who have been in the military or similar kind of jobs have a lot of experience dealing with a lot of pressure, having to make swift decisions without being able to think them through fully, and they are more likely to be risk takers, which I think at this point we need people who are able to cope with pressure. Cause like with Liz Truss, she has not been able to cope with the pressure of kind of coming after Boris Johnson, having to deal with the Queen's death and all of the problems that have come from over the past few years. So it would be good to have someone who is competent, who is committed as well, because I think we really need someone who is going to stay in the first place. And I think particularly with Penny, she has already displayed this week that she can be put in a kind of improvised situation after she answered a question for Liz Truss earlier this week in Parliament.
Okay, so Lottie, I'm going to change this question slightly. So Cora there, obviously, we've had a lot of words on discipline. Cora there brought up I'm not going to lie, I've just completely forgot what you brought up. That's really embarrassing.
Do you want me to remind you?
I could, yeah, if you could. It just completely slipped my mind.
To summarise, I said it would be good to have someone competent who's able to take risks and to work under pressure.
Got it, I've remembered it. Thank you. You're welcome. So working under pressure, I think, is undeniably a good trait for someone in this kind of job. It is a very high-pressure thing. You are, every decision, and rightly so, is completely scrutinised. But do we want someone that is... Yes, a risk taker might be what we need to get us out of this mess, but do we necessarily need someone that's going to be as decisive as military people are trained to be? They don't, you know, if they're not taking the second thought, if they're not thinking it through, is that necessarily what we want, or do we need someone that is going to be patient and take time with it? Which again, you know, that is probably a stereotype I've just played into there, as saying that everyone from the military is acting quickly, no time for thought, we will act on instinct. But, you know, so sort of same question, but with this added information as context as well, what do you think?
Yeah, this was kind of my thoughts. I think it's a good question to be raised. I think kind of the nature of the military and armed forces kind of is very rigid, and there's not much leeway in, like, this is what you do. You have, in a similar way to politics, yes, you have kind of like a hierarchy of people in the army, obviously. But I think politics, especially at the minute, cannot really be as rigid. I think many, like, MPs and things do not view it as a rigid kind of system. So I think, like, a lot of people speak about, like, a military style, like, for ex-soldiers and things that they kind of develop into their own everyday lives. And I mean, I've experienced that from people in the army and things, and they have a very, like, set way of doing things. Not all of them, it's a complete stereotype, I'm not saying that. But I think, yeah, it's just, I don't think they're entirely comparable when you actually dissect them and analyse them as separate kind of things.
We are now going to take, still sticking with the sort of military theme, seen as these are our front runners at the minute, we're going to take a different stance. So we've went, again, as I said earlier, David Cameron at least didn't look like he just rolled out of bed, at least could string a sentence together. And, you know, whether or not you agree with his politics, is it important in the world of politics, and this is a very, very shallow thing to talk about, but is it important that you, A, look presentable, B, even regardless of your politics, are a good public speaker? Like, so we'll talk about the public speaking first, I think. Is it, what is more important, Will, I'm going to come to you. I'm aware I'm kind of just doing circles of the room at the minute. I might mix it up a bit again. But is it more important to have that, you know, figurehead trait of I am a good public speaker, I am a good... Because then, you know, you look at the likes of, like, Ronald Reagan for the US. Brilliant public speaker, obviously, actor. But politics-wise, poor. Regardless of who you support, I'm sure, you know, some of the decisions he made can universally be regarded as poor. So is that more important at the moment in the climate we find ourselves in, to have someone that is, when we look at them, not an embarrassment, and you can just go, I can actually listen to this guy speak for a little bit, I don't mind that? Or is it less important about that and more important about the behind-the-scenes stuff, the actual decisions that is made, and policies as well?
It's a difficult question to answer, really, because I think it... If from a politician's perspective, of course, it's good to have that oratory skill, that sort of presentability, because ultimately that's how you get elected. But one of the sort of dullest political speakers of the last century would be like Clement Attlee, who is responsible for implementing the NHS sort of in that post-1945 Labour government. So it's difficult to say whether that presentability, that sort of I can listen to this guy speak for, you know, he's quite a good public speaker, whether that's really important, because some of the most successful politicians in history have been poor public speakers. But I think in our modern day, it's probably more important than ever, because there isn't that sort of everything's got to be, you've got to be sort of media savvy, you've got to be savvy with the public, you know, a politician's got to be a sort of a complete media person as well as being a politician. So I think it's almost unavoidable nowadays not to be this sort of media savvy, presentable. I mean, because Jeremy Corbyn got torn apart for being sort of scruffy, that was what a lot of the media attacked him on. So I think it's probably unavoidable for a politician nowadays not to be, but then again, politicians still are. Liz Truss, quite poor public speaker, and well, she's gone.
She is indeed. So, well, actually, not yet.
Not yet.
Yes.
A week left.
Do we count this now? As a little quick fun thing to say before we maybe go to a song break, we will be coming back to this story again afterwards. Are we counting this last week as on top of her current days, or are we just keeping it at the 44? And have we, or has anyone checked whether the lettuce has gone bad yet, or if it's still all right?
The lettuce won.
The lettuce won?
Yeah.
Lettuce won, and are we counting more than these 44 that she's got?
No, she deserves the shame.
She deserves the shame. 44. Deserves. How do we recover the way we look after robotic May, dishevelled Boris, and then robotic but lagging? At least Theresa May spoke when she went up to the microphone. How do we recover our stance from this? Can it be a Tory member? How long, and what are you guys looking for if we get another general election? Because we've all said, I believe we said last week, not all of us were particularly fans of Keir. So what do Labour, Green, Lib Dems, anyone who thinks they stand a fighting chance, which is probably just Labour really, in a hopefully arriving soon general election, what do they have to do to win our votes? Because I think a lot of us said that at the minute our votes, even though we might still be Labour because we don't want our votes to be futile, I think I actually said I would probably go Green at this point, because who else do you back right now? Cora, I'm going to come to you on this.
Yep, so earlier actually in the Impact office, just a little plug that we hang out there if you want to come visit, we were discussing this specific question really, and looking at kind of discussions online on forums and all sorts. Currently, if a general election occurs, the Conservatives will no longer be the opposition. It will actually go to the Scots instead. So they have a brighter future by the looks of it than the Conservatives. But again, I think I have to agree with you, Jack, that I'd probably go Green Party. Although it would be entertaining to see the Conservatives go through every single one of their members just to see what crazy personalities we would get to see, although it would not be very useful for our country in any way.
So when you say Scots, I assume you mean the SNP?
Yes.
Yes. So on the SNP then, I personally, and I don't think I'm alone in this, again, more on a public speaker side and presentability side and the way she conducts herself, I quite like Nicola Sturgeon in that manner. I think she certainly cuts it better with the rest of the global leaders that are sort of well-respected. I can't remember the leader from New Zealand, but she's really good.
Jacinda Ardern.
Yeah, and Angela Merkel, obviously, you know, has been very successful and very well-respected. Justin Theroux from... Is that how you say his name? How do you say...
I think you're right.
Is it? Have I just...
Justin...
Trudeau.
Justin Theroux. Okay, Louis Theroux's cousin, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. Sorry, yes. Got Louis Theroux for Prime Minister, actually.
Oh, definitely.
Not my vote.
Yes. Justin Trudeau from Canada. You know, all of these people, they've got excellent policies, but their countries actually like them because of, you know, the way they conduct themselves and, you know, their presentability. So, you know, would we be in favour? Do we think the SNP should be given more of a say? And obviously it looks like that is going to be the case. I don't know really where my stance is on the likes of Scottish independence and things like that, but would we be against them? Would that be bad for the UK as a whole? Lottie, I'll come to you.
No, I think they definitely deserve a bit more of like a recognition on the like political stage within the UK, because I mean, like, whether you like it or not, they're part of the UK, and like they've got some incredible politicians who, like, they're really good speakers and everything like that, and I think they can add a lot to like political discussions about every aspect of the UK. I don't think they're necessarily like, I just care about Scotland, I just care, because at the end of the day, England, Wales and Ireland all affect them as well, so they're obviously going to be concerned with us, kind of. And then, I mean, on the topic of like public speaking, I think the biggest thing that we're kind of looking for is people who are like relatable and we can actually understand what they're saying, because a lot of the time when kind of politicians they've received a really good education or whatever. They're good at like throwing out fancy words and hiding exactly what they mean by using like good terminology, if that makes sense. So I think we just need speakers who actually set out exactly what they mean and stick to it.
And do we think, Ome, with the backgrounds of the two Tory candidates, whether you know you agree with the policies or not, do we think that maybe a background in the armed forces is something that that will deliver? Because, you know, having did we have a rank on either of them, Cora?
Penny was a naval reserve.
Okay.
And then let me double check. I think for Ben Wallace, he was a soldier in Germany, Cyprus, Belize and Northern Ireland, and he thwarted an IRA effort to carry out a bomb attack against British soldiers.
But do we have a, I mean, that's fair play, but do we have a rank? We don't have a rank.
No, that's okay. All the information we
but,
have.
You know, possibility, if, you know, going into politics afterwards, you would maybe assume that they were, you know, had some sort of status within their specific armed forces. Do we think that is more guaranteed, sort of a bit of honesty, a bit of accountability is more guaranteed with someone from that kind of background, or do you think we could expect the opposite?
I think we could expect some relatability. I mean, I was reading up on, is it Penny Mordaunt?
Penny Mordaunt.
And it says that she doesn't have a lot of like economic knowledge, which I guess is kind of important, especially now with like the cost of living and inflation. But I feel like she could be relatable. I think military people would be better at public speaking. They carry themselves quite well, which is what we want in a prime minister. So I'm not sure. I'm leaning towards yes, but it could go the other way.
Yeah. So
sorry to interrupt you, Jack, but yep, we have found out that he was a second lieutenant and was promoted captain.
So he does. He has a bit of status, and he's, you know, experienced for lack of a better term, off the top of my head right now, giving orders. Obviously, it's a little bit different from that. You know, it's much more taking everyone's sort of ideas into account when you're in this job. It's, you know, less split second decision making. But that rank, that stature, would that bring any confidence for you, Will, or is it again something we maybe don't want, the military style rigor that we can maybe sometimes associate?
To be totally honest, I think with both of them it's probably a bit futile at this point. I think what really matters is the fact that they've
is that they're not Boris.
Well, no, I think with both of them, the fact that I think what the most sort of infuriating thing about the last few days is that it's still so clear that it's about the party and not the people. It's still all about this idea of, well, we won't call a general election because, I mean, the party would be decimated, you know, oh, well, we need someone to come in to save the party. It's all about the party and not them. And I think that's the most important. I don't think any of them, to be totally honest, from anyone in that Conservative Party right now has any sort of credibility left.
Yeah.
It seems like an unpopular opinion to take, but since last week, I am now on the same page as Ben Mellor. I do actually have a soft spot for Keir Starmer. And to be totally honest, I think at this point, when you look at the alternative, and when you look at what the policies that he's setting out now, the policy framework of a nationalised energy company, the policy framework if he wants to repeal any attempt for to stop workers from striking, he wants to. I just think that to sort of, I think it is. It does seem to be the sort of cool thing to. Oh well. We don't like Keir Starmer. And do you know what? I think he's not really put a foot wrong over the last 6 months, bar possibly the point that people have made about him not supporting striking workers. And I'm quite ready for any sort of positive change. And the only thing I would say to people is that in the current electoral system we have, if you live in a constituency where it is just a straight-up battle between the Conservatives and Labour, if you want any other future apart from this, it does feel like the only way to sort of vote is Labour. And that may not be the perfect option for people. I get that people have reservations about him. I get that, you know, for a lot of the Labour membership, he broke a lot of he made 10 promises when he started his leadership campaign. And I think one of them was to nationalise rail, energy and water. And he's not pulled through on the rail and the water. But I think right now anything is a positive change. And yeah, it's funny when we keep on, because it's like, it seemed like the conversation a couple of months ago as well, who can replace Johnson? And you know, 12 years of conservative rule, and I think they're stale to the core, really. I think there's no ideas left, no imagination. And yeah, I don't think any of them can solve. That's my ran over. I'm not sure any of them are going to solve it.
And how important is that? Because we talk about kind of creativity and ideas and things like that, but there is, you know, yeah, there is pragmatism is required. You have to be a realist in the mess that they've got us in. There is absolutely no possibility of starting with a clean slate. So is it best for now to send in someone from the, again, not saying I agree with this, but is the best option for the country right now to send someone in, the best possible option for the Tories, to get them to sort it out a little bit before? Because if there was a general election, are we all under the impression that if Labour or any other party bar the Tories were to win, it wouldn't be any case of sort of, you know, any notes passed, any advice given, it would be, here's our mess, you sort it out. So is the best option for now to try and send in the best possible candidate, which you might not get if Boris runs again, from the Tory leadership contest, to try and at least get us in a position where someone else can come in and not just be completely undermined by the mess that's already there?
Yeah, I think so. I think what we need before a general election can happen is to be in a position of stability. At the moment, we're all over the place and we haven't really had anything fixed or anything improved over the past few months since Boris resigned. And before we can just let another party come in, if that is the case, and fix everything, they need to be able to start somewhere with a foundation. But at the moment, there's none.
I don't know if they would be able to save their reputation, though, because they have got a reputation. I think that we should just go for a general election, because I don't know if anyone's good enough or they're going to be able to clean it. But I know we're not going to go for a general election. I know they're going to keep putting out people to just try and save their face, but I don't think that's going to happen soon. I think we'll go through another resignation and then another one, and they'll just keep pumping people out because they don't want to be extinct. And I think that could happen potentially with the Conservatives.
Extinct, biggest party in the country, extinct. Wow, bold claim, but I'm not going to say that I would be against it. Is that wishful thinking, though? Is it wishful thinking? Sorry, I'd asked the first part of the question in my head and not out loud. Is it wishful thinking to assume that the Tory party, whoever the candidate that manages to get in will be, is going to put the nation's need first rather than the party? Because as Will said, it's all about the party at the minute. It's saving face of the party. It's getting the party out of the mess we're in. The mess that the party is in is a fraction of the mess that they've put the rest of us in, and on a national scale. So do you think we can expect with these new leaders, whoever it is, again, possibly Boris, but you know, that's just a rumour in the minute. Do you think we can genuinely expect someone to come in with the right intentions of sorting it out for the country, or are we just doomed to keep repeating and keep suffering through power hungry morons? Lottie?
You hear a lot, like on Twitter and things, of like, oh, it's fine, they're like the best of a bad bunch, this kind of like discussion. And it's so true, like, you've got to just kind of back who you think is the best of, yeah, a bad bunch. So I don't think, I mean, it's obviously opinion based, because like everyone's idea of the bad bunch is different, but I mean, they've proven that like they don't know what they're doing at all. And I think they just need to, whoever's next needs to, whatever they say in these big grand speeches, they just need to stick to. I don't think make any false promises. And yeah, I think I said this earlier, we just need more certainty with what's happening, instead of like looking and thinking, oh, could this happen, could it not? That's what I'd really like to see, and I think everyone else would.
Yeah. So as we are coming towards the end of our pulse this evening, I am going to go, we might finish with something a little bit little bit nicer, or maybe another discussion about Taylor Swift. But what I'm going to go around the room is, let's say Tory party come in and, you know, we're fortunate enough that they, within not too long a space of time, go, yes, there will be a general election because you've no one in the country bar our members have voted for me. Do we see a winner? Do we see a change in any party leadership before the in other parties go into that? Because obviously in certain areas of the country, I myself am quite a big fan. Andy Burnham is a beloved beloved politician at the minute. Could we see him sort of, do we think he's the type of guy that would go for the head of the Labour Party, challenge Keir maybe? Again, I think I have softened on Keir this week, having, you know, the shambles of politics that it is. Mm. I mean, I still wouldn't say I would maybe don't want him probably, but could we, who can we see from the world of politics, and it's all right if it's completely out of left field, can we see possibly taking the dub in the next general election, which hopefully won't be too far away? Omay, I'll come to you first.
Who do you see? I don't see... Yeah, so if we do go for a general election, do you mean?
Yes, yeah, okay. Yeah.
So I don't know if it'll be Conservative, but I think hopefully maybe Labour. I think a lot of people are liking Keir Starmer right now. But it's one of those, you know, like the America situation, where it was Donald Trump and Joe Biden. It was like the best of both evils. I think it's kind of like that. Like, which one do we think... Like, they're not good, but which one do we think will be the best?
Yeah.
And I think Labour might be the best. That's me, personally.
Cora?
I think it's a tough question, because I'd like to say that I'd either go I'd go for Labour or I'd go for Green Party separately. But again, I agree that we've got to pick either Conservative or Labour at this point. But for me, I don't have the same soft spot for Keir Starmer as Will. And
out of interest, what's the reasoning? Because I'm intrigued. Like,
so for me, I've had experience working with the Labour Party for a week and working behind the scenes, seeing all the kind of policies whilst they're in development, and just the communication across the entire party is horrendous. And I feel like it starts at the leadership. There's no way you're going to be able to get everyone working together well when even the leadership doesn't want to work with those that are in lesser positions than them. And I do feel like at this point, a good shift in leadership could boost a lot of morale, boost a lot of interest in politics once again, because I do feel like the main focus with everything going on at the moment is on the problems and all the chaos going on. It's not really been brought to who can lead us and who can support this country best. And for me, Keir Starmer doesn't kind of...
But that's on a sort of your experience of the party and not a personal level.
It's not on a personal level, no. It's my experience of the party.
Okay, that's fair enough.
So then, Cora, follow-up question. Is there anybody right now, and this obviously I'm not expecting you to know every single Labour, Tory, Green MP, but is there someone, obviously I mentioned Andy Burnham, but I spend a lot of time in Manchester, so the kind of mood there is we all love Andy Burnham. Is there anybody that you would say, I think they might actually be quite good for the job?
Well, I think personally, I would quite like to see either a woman or minority ethnic in the leadership position, because quite a lot of the time, Labour is preaching that they are diverse, but you never see anyone other than white men in the leadership team. And I think having that change would be fantastic. So you have like Nadia Whittam, who's MP locally. She has a lot of fantastic ideas that
she's
I support.
Coventry.
No, she's Nottingham. I don't know what area.
We interviewed her in our Freshers edition of the Impact magazine, so go check that out.
We've spoken about it a few times. Where can people find Impact magazine, Lottie?
All around campus, even on the other two campuses as well, Sutton, Boningham, or whatever it's called,
Bonington.
And the Jubilee campus. You can find it everywhere. There's little stands.
And if they wanted to find it online,
Just impactmagazine.com, I believe.
Impactnottingham.com
for all there of their coverage, and of course you are in 1350 as well for all of our news coverage. Lottie, same question.
As
before,
I'd personally like to see a coalition. I think a different structure to our political system would be beneficial. I don't think any party on their own has power to... Well, no, they do have the power, I'm not saying that. But, like, I think it would just be nice to see kind of like a cooperative kind of system. And as for MPs, I'd really love to see Angela Rayner lead for Labour. I really love Angela Rayner. I think she's very competent and very kind of real. Her Twitter's really cool as well. She always is attacking the government, but in a very respectful way. So, yeah, there you go.
Is she the Coventry one?
You're thinking of Zara Sultana.
I am, you're right. Yes, I am.
Who is also very good, we should add. Yeah. She's great.
So, Will, I came to you last because you've already sort of made it clear on your slight position change on Keir Starmer following last Thursday's post. So, for you, is it, well, conveniently as well, because he's the only one currently in a seat of power that could do
it's
so.
Lucky that.
Yeah. Is it Keir Starmer that you think is an option and probably the person you would back for in the general election?
I think realistically, come 2024-25, I think he's most likely in the current state to win the election.
And do you think by 2024-25 he will probably still be in his position, or do you think it's someone else might have taken over?
I think so, yeah, because I think probably the only person with the sort of stance within the party to challenge him right now would be Andy Burnham, and his term as mayor of Greater Manchester doesn't end until 2024. But post that, I think he would be very up for making a return. And funnily enough, he does support electoral reform. So getting a change of sort of the system in Westminster would be quite possible under Andy Burnham. So yeah, I think come the next general election, I think the damage the Conservatives have done to themselves is far too great to have any kind of recovery. They might, you know, cut their losses in that sense and recover sort of, maybe, I mean, if we're talking about them being on 40-odd seats at the moment, they might recover 100 seats, but I can't see them getting anywhere near challenging at the next general election.
Yeah.
On campus
and online.
Online.
This is URN.